Why take one vacation with the family when you could take all of them? With Royal Caribbean, you don't just go to the beach. You visit a private island and race down the tallest water slide in North America. You don't just go for a road trip. You ATV and zip line through the jungle. You don't just go somewhere new. You rappel down waterfalls and discover ancient temples. Because this isn't just any vacation. This is all the vacations. Come seek the Royal Caribbean. Ships Registry, Bahamas.
You're listening to the ESPN Footy Podcast.
G'day guys, welcome to Red Time, a brand new podcast here at ESPN where we dissect and debate all the hot topics evolving in the world of AFL. I'm your host, Jared Barker, and every week I'll be joined by ESPN's Jake Michaels. Jake, welcome to Red Time.
Mr. Barker, how are you?
Going well, how are you?
Always good. Very excited for this, I got to say. I know I say that quite a bit on our regular Tuesday show that I'm excited for whatever episode or project we've got coming up. But this one especially, because it's something that has been, as you well know, in the works for quite a while.
Yep.
And the last 3 years I've been looking at introducing a second show each week, but it's just been a lot of reasons why we haven't been able to do it, unfortunately. But fortunately, we are doing it this year, and it should be a whole lot of fun.
I'm looking forward to this. We will be here all year long. It'll be short, it'll be snappier. So the format is a bit different to our Tuesday episode. So exciting to get this underway. I mean, look, we've disagreed on a few footy opinions just back in the office when the cameras aren't rolling. So looking forward to butting heads with you and, of course, proving you wrong as per usual. But guys, we are into red time of the week, so we need to get stuck straight into it. Guys, footy's back. No more preseason. That's in the bin. The real stuff starts. It's Melbourne and Sydney tonight, but we'll get to that shortly. The first topic we do want to talk about is Jimmy Webster and concussion. Now, Webster was suspended for 7 matches for his high bump on North Melbourne co-captain Jai Simpkin. So, Jake, I ask you, was the 7-match ban excessive, or do you think it was a fair outcome?
I think it can be both. Let me explain. I think it is a touch excessive when you look at it on the surface. The bump, I know a lot of people have compared that bump to some others in recent history, particularly Cozzy Pickett's bump on Bailey Smith last year that resulted in a 2-week suspension.
Yep.
The biggest issue that I still have with the way these have been adjudicated and go through the tribunal is the fact that we're still focused so much on the outcome as opposed to the action. I would argue the Pickett bump is worse.
Okay, so I agree with you, and not a lot of people do. In terms of the action,
The action was worse. There was more force in it. There was more malice, and it's hard to know exactly which hit was harder. But your eye tells you the Pickett hit was harder. Mm. Now, of course, Smith gets up, keeps playing, and we all forget about it until now, and then everyone's talking about it again. So why is that not the same? This is my biggest issue that I have.
And that was 2 weeks versus 7 weeks.
Versus seven. Yeah. So this is more than three times. They're saying this is almost more than three times as bad, which just doesn't add up
in my mind. Is the 7 weeks wrong, or was it just wrong to make Cozzy Pickett's suspension only 2 weeks?
So that's exactly it. So that's where I said at the start. So I think it's a touch excessive in the sense that, yes, it should be somewhere in the middle. I think 5 weeks is... I'd be comfortable with 5 weeks. We don't want to see it. But we shouldn't be overreacting because of the result being a concussion. I understand with everything which happened with Angus Brayshaw and Braden Maynard late last year, and obviously Brayshaw's retirement, which is, we don't want to see that. But at the end of the day, why aren't we treating, if we don't want to see concussion, let's try and remove anything that could lead to a concussion.
Yeah.
So that's the same as going back to the picket bump. That should be 100% the same.
Mm. Look, I'm with you on that. I think 7 weeks is satisfactory. It's probably what we all expected, somewhere between 6 and 8. I said on Tuesday, actually, that I didn't really understand what the difference was between him getting 5 weeks or 12 weeks. And I spoke about the AFL trying to make a statement to just try and stop these players from making those decisions. I don't think there is a difference between 12 and 5 in terms of making a statement. So I think, look, 7 weeks is satisfactory. And with everything happening with concussion in our game at the moment, I mean, only yesterday the AFL just announced the new concussion protocols and guidelines for community footy. So now there's a 21-day rest period between when a player gets concussed and then can play his next game. That's every level below the AFL, of course. It includes state league, so VFL and Sandful footy as well. So with all of that, I'm pretty happy with the 7 weeks. I just don't want it to go too far one way and go, Look, a player's been concussed. Let's try and find a reason to suspend someone. I'm not saying that's the case with Jimmy Webster, or I'm not saying that's the direction the AFL is going in.
They shouldn't be.
I worry that they do go in that direction. Footy acts are still footy acts. Concussion will happen. It sucks that it happens.
Mm.
It's going to happen in 100 years' time. People are going to get concussed and accidents happen on the football field. So I think a nice difference needs to be made clearly between football act and non-football act. And I think Jimmy Webster, clearly, we both agree, was not a football act and he deserves his whack.
Well, it was a football act, but it's just so late.
It can't be anymore, yeah. Can it?
Well, no, this is the thing. But this goes back to the same issue. They want to try and get rid of this, and I understand them wanting to try and get rid of this.
Mm.
But there's a big difference between a bump when the player's got the ball and a bump that's late. Are they both still football acts? Well, you could argue yes, you could argue one.
Players can't make that risk anymore.
Exactly. You just can't be doing it.
That's right.
Look, moving on to a team that is playing this week, the Swans. Massive injury list. Huge injury list. There was a lot of expectation on the Swans leading into the season with their big-name recruits, but huge injury list, as I said. How much of a concern is that for this club, particularly heading into opening round?
I think it's more the importance of the players on the injury list. It's the midfield, right? So Callum Mills, Luke Parker with his broken arm, and Taylor Adams over last week hurting his knee as well. So that's almost a starting midfield. That's not going to be tonight against the Demons. And it's a really experienced midfield as well. So how much concern do I have? I need to see them play without those players before I share what my concerns are. I mean, they still have Errol Goulden. They've still got Chad Warner. Isaac Heaney is going to be playing a lot more time in the midfield this season. He spent a lot of the preseason training there, so expect to see him in the middle a bit more. And obviously, Brody Grundy, the new recruit as well. I think he's out for vengeance this year with what's happened with him the last couple of years. I think he's going to have a really important season. I mean, I think we forget how good he was in his prime Collingwood days when he was making the All-Australian teams from 2018-19. He's a terrific ruckman. I reckon we're going to see the best of him this season. But how much concern do I have? Not a lot yet. And I think they've got a really big test coming up, not only against Melbourne, but Collingwood in round two as well. I mean, leading disposals in inside 50s last year, Goulden and Warner.
Yeah.
Most rating points for the year, Goulden and Warner. And they're also the number one and two players for score involvements at the Swans last year. They're still there tonight. But there's no doubting those other three are really important.
Yeah, but all of a sudden you've got, you know, if you want to say that they were one and two last year, that's fine. I don't think anyone's really going to argue. But three, four, five, six, that's where they're going to have to find new players to come and fill those spots there. And that's where I think they might be found out, that depth, particularly around the stoppages. And the thing is, they're going up a team that's their strength. Melbourne, you with Petrarca and Oliver back, Viney, that is their strength. That's what they love the game played that way. And that was where the game turned last year in Sydney. I think the final round of the season when the two played up there. So I think it's concerning, but look, they're not the only team. Richmond also got injury concerns. Mm-hmm. There are a lot of teams going through it, and it seems to you don't seem to get injuries scattered throughout your team. It seems to decimate one particular unit, and for the Swans, it's the midfield. It is concerning.
Yeah, and we spoke about Brody Grundy. Well, he's one really big trade acquisition for the Swans this year. There's been a lot of movement, actually, and a lot of big name players had moved clubs, Jake. So I ask you now, who is going to be the recruit of the year?
Well, I've got two names that I'll sort of throw around. I think you said one of them, Grundy. You know my feeling about Ruckman. I think everyone knows my feeling about Ruckman by now.
Should they still exist, Ruckman, do you reckon? Tell them what you really think.
That's got to be another question. That's got a question for another day, I think. Right. But look, I think Grundy, we saw Gawn last year when Grundy went out of the team late in the year. I think there was a four-game period where he was the champion data's highest-ranked player in the league, where he dominated for a month. He was fantastic. He relished the opportunity of just having that job and not sharing it. Whether it was shared 50-50, 70-30, it was your job. You need to ruck solely for us. And he was fantastic. He did everything. I wonder if we'll see something similar with Grundy. To getting more opportunity to be, because he was never going there to be the number one ruckman. Now he gets that opportunity. As you said, people do forget. Footy moves quickly. People forget 2-3 years ago, 4 years ago. He was spoken about. He was an All-Australian. He was spoken about as potentially the best ruckman in the league. It was Gawn and Grundy were like this. So I think there's every reason to suggest that he could go back to being thrown back into the sort of upper echelon of rucks in the league.
Mm.
And if Sydney, particularly with, I know we just mentioned their midfield being decimated, but when they're back there, and he's got enough players around him to make him look good as well. The other player I've sort of looked at is Asava Radigalia. Now, we know Port were good team last year.
Their biggest deficiency was their backline last year.
Exactly. They were a bottom six ranked team in a lot of defensive metrics. They don't need to climb to be 1, 2, 3, 4. If they can be the 6th or 7th best defense now in a lot of those same areas, they're going to be, and everything else can be massive caveat, but everything else can stay the same, they're going to be a top four side again. Now, how they go in finals, that's another discussion again, but they're going to be a good team. If they clean up that defensive work, he's going to get an enormous amount of credit for it. I think he will be their best defensive player, certainly the best defensive player they've brought in. And yeah, I think he's a massive chance to, again, sort of have a bit more responsibility. And
freeing up someone like an Alir, who had to play as a lockdown defender last year, now he gets to play his much preferred intercept.
Exactly, where he thrives.
And I had those guys on my list as well, but I'm going to go with Lockie Schultz. I think he's a terrific footballer. And one of those guys who, if he played for a Victorian club, would be far more appreciated. And I just think he fits the Collingwood mould so perfectly. So he's coming off back-to-back seasons, kicking 30-plus goals, nearly 3 shots a goal per game last season, over 5 score involvements, and he was 4th in the entire competition for tackles inside 50. I think that's really representative of the way Collingwood want their smaller forwards to play. So, he's a terrific player.
What's his ceiling? Do you think he could be an All-Australian this year?
He's an All-Australian smoky, depending on how Collingwood perform. He adds another layer to the whole forward mix. I think he's an upgrade on Jack Inovan. He can play a little bit taller. He takes good marks. He can play small. He's really tenacious. He's quick. He's got great goal sense. I think this is a terrific pickup for the Magpies.
Because that gap, we've spoken about it, whether I think Toby Green, Charlie Cameron, in terms of the smaller general forwards, there's a bit of a gap from those two guys to the third.
I think it's more the role that he gives to Collingwood. And Freo lose a great player, but I think Collingwood are gaining, as I said, 30 goals and a lot of tackles, and that pressure inside 50 is
but, exactly, you know, a lot more opportunity, you would imagine, as well.
Yep. No, I agree.
Tasmania. A lot of talk about Tassie.
Good state.
You like Tassie?
I've never been there, but
you've never been to Tassie. That's surprising. You're a well-travelled man. Who should the new Tasmania AFL club target as its marquee recruit?
This is a really interesting question and an exciting question too. We know that they're going to announce their nickname and colours in just a couple of weeks' time. And look, assuming everything goes well and goes to plan in terms of the construction of this new stadium, which is what the fulfilment of their license actually hinges on, and the AFL has strongly maintained that. So I'm going to assume all goes to plan.
Yep.
They enter the competition in 2028. I think it's easy for people to look at the Tasmanian-based players currently in the game. You only need to look to the 2023 draft, and you've got Riley Sanders. He hasn't played a game yet. Colby Kircher as well. They'll be 22, turning 23 by the time 2028 comes, maybe sort of emerging as some of the better midfielders in the competition. So you can easily look at those guys, and you know, Chase Jones is a nice former first-round draft pick from Tasmania as well. But I want to park them aside and look at, who are the players that are going to be in their 8th, 9th, 10th years in the competition?
And some of these non-Tasmanians.
They're not Tasmanian, but look, Tassie are going to have a lot of cash to splash. So potentially players entering free agency. I've looked at these drafts, and the guys that stick out in my mind, Max King and Ben King. Imagine them as a 1-2 punch spearheading that Tasmania attack. I mean, there would be nothing more enticing as a Tassie footy fan than to see the King brothers come down, give them whatever money they want. That's an incredible full forward and centre half forward to have.
So how old would they be then? They're going to be, that'd be 20...
8, 7, 8,
something
like that. So, their prime as a key forward.
Yeah, it's a massive get if they were able to push those two.
They'll be throwing the kitchen sink around everywhere. I mean, look, if it's not the full forwards that they want to build a team around, it will be maybe a star midfielder like Sam Walsh or Matt Rowell, Tom Green. They're around those drafts as well. So I think they're going to throw the kitchen sink at someone. They will land a big fish. Don't you worry about that.
I worry with the King brothers that in 12 to 24 months' time, the King brothers will be far bigger names than they are right now. And then this dream becomes harder and harder and harder to actually turn into reality.
Yep.
We haven't seen the best of Max King yet. We've seen glimpses. He's really yet to string 2 months together of good footy. Ben has had his injury concerns. So, I, as I said, I think over the next 2 years, we're going to start seeing more and more from these guys. Look, I think it's not just the players that Tassie needs to be looking at. It's coaching staff and the whole staff unit. I think there are a lot of names that you could throw out there.
And the AFL want Tasmania to be as competitive as possible from the get-go. They don't want a repeat of the Suns, who haven't made finals yet, or the Giants, who took a long time to get up and going. They want to be successful right away. So the coaching appointment, you're right, is actually quite important.
Yeah, and I think from a playing perspective and coaching as well, I think it's important to have to bring in people that are from Tasmania. Not to say that every person has to be, but I think you get a little bit more out of someone like this, being part of something new that... Growing up in Tasmania, they would have all dreamed of having their own team, as we've heard Jack Riewoldt speak about this, and lots of players. So he's someone who's interesting to me. What will he be wanting to do down the road? Will he be wanting to coach? Will he be wanting to be someone who's in some sort of advisory role? Or where will he sort of fit into this puzzle? Rodney Eade, he's another one. He's a Tasmanian, obviously hasn't coached since the Suns. Is he still someone that you think they would entertain as a potential coach to lead the Tassie side in its first couple of years?
It won't be a first time coach, right? That's not really going to be on
tough,
the agenda.
Tough, yeah. It would be hard to see that happening.
So someone like a Nathan Buckley coming back for a second go at it?
Wouldn't be surprised. No, I think some might have said could have thrown Michael Voss's name up if Carlton didn't turn their season around last year. So I think there's quite a few names, but I think it's important to look at the Tassie talent first, whether it's players or coaches, and build around that. Because I think that if you can bring in a couple of key pillars that are Tasmanian, they're going to want to be there for one, and they're probably not going to want to leave. Whereas if you're pinning your hopes to others that may leave, the whole house of cards could come crashing down.
Yeah, no, it's an interesting discussion. But from Tasmania, now we go to South Australia, and one of their hyped teams going into this season is obviously the Adelaide Crows. They just missed out on finals last season. Jake, is 2024 a flat-out failure if Adelaide does not finish in the top eight?
I mean, it is for any side, right? True sense of the word, I mean, you could say West Coast finished ninth, but it's a failure.
Depends on what your goals are.
Yes, that's exactly it. So the goal should be for Adelaide 100%. They should be playing finals. Many would say they probably should have been there last year, and we don't need to go through all that again, but they probably deserve to be there. They're going to be a better side this year, you would think. Now, it's not like they've brought in a host of players that are going to make them better, but they're going to get continued improvement on a lot of these young guys. They are a young side. Mm-hmm. I think the midfield, particularly with Dawson going to the midfield last year, his ball use and what he was able to do alongside someone as consistent and as steady as Rory Laird. We saw Matt Crouch return back into the midfield as well and played career best footy. I think the midfield looks pretty good. The forward line is young and super talented. Isaac Rankin, I think, someone who's going to be playing both and has an extremely high ceiling for what he can achieve. The defence is probably where I'm a little bit unsure as to how the Crows are going to go. They've lost their best defender in Tom Duda, though he's missed a lot of footy, so they've kind of got used to not playing with him. But I think that'll be where their season won and lost. Can they outscore their opponents? I mean, it sounds easy, but they're going to be giving up a lot of points. So do they have the firepower to be matching these and winning these shootouts?
Yeah, I think you're right. I think they're an elite forward line. I mean, I rank them as the second best forward line in the competition.
Second best.
In the positional rankings that went live on ESPN, obviously, we know we did that assignment throughout the entire offseason. I've rated them really highly in the forward line. I mean, Tex, 70-plus goals, et cetera, et cetera. Yeah. Rankin and Rochelli, strong midfield and a good back line without having stars necessarily. Yep. I think, look, last year they lost 8 games by 3 goals or less and 5 games by less than 1 goal. Yep. I know it doesn't work like this, but if you flip those 1 goal losses around, they win 16 matches, they're in the top 4, and they're equal on wins with Collingwood and Brisbane, last year's grand finalists. The talent-wise, I think they should be expecting the finals, and I think it is a failure if they don't make the finals.
Yeah, I think I tend to agree. I think they probably should be looking at that six, seven, eight spot is probably somewhere where they would probably likely shake out when the year's done. Anything outside of finals would be disappointing.
Yep.
Why take one vacation with the family when you could take all of them? With Royal Caribbean, you don't just go to the beach. You visit a private island and race down the tallest water slide in North America. You don't just go for a road trip. You ATV and zip line through the jungle. You don't just go somewhere new. You rappel down waterfalls and discover ancient temples. Because this isn't just any vacation. This is all the vacations. Come seek the Royal Caribbean. Ships Registry, Bahamas.
Speaking of teams looking to play finals, Suns, you know, spoken about them, but Damian Hardwick, he came out when he was given the job saying 80% of the club's first premiership list is already there. He said they're going to be playing finals this year. Is he putting too much expectation and pressure on this side so early?
Yes, but I don't think it's a bad thing. I like the bullish sort of the ambitions of him, and I think saying something like that gives your players and your whole list something to actually thrive for. Mm. And it gives your fans hope too. And I think that's something that's really important for the Suns. It's something that they haven't really had throughout their short little career. Do I think they're good enough to make finals in 2024? No, not right now. I think he's sort of right. There is a lot of talent
there. What are they missing?
I think that they've got a really strong spot. I like Lukoschus and King up forward. They're really talented. I mean, their midfield, which we're going to get to shortly, is quite good. We know that. And Ballard and Collins are quite good in the back line as well. I think they're just a little bit vanilla around them. And until they get all that talent playing the right way and playing to Dimmer's game style, I mean, it's going to be hard for them to do it. It'd be a fabulous story if they made finals, but I just don't see it happening this season.
Yeah, look, I tend to agree with what you're saying. The amount, the confidence, this is a side that from a playing perspective of individual players and the club as a whole, has lacked confidence. They've never been a finalist, as we know. A lot of the players there have never played in a final. Some have at other clubs, also, but most are so, it's just such a foreign experience for them. I think giving that confidence is something they need.
Yeah.
Now, whether they take that and it works out, we'll have to wait and see. Whether, you know, we might look back on it in 3 months' time and say, gee, what was he doing? They're nowhere near it. So we'll have to wait and see. They haven't looked as nice as I would probably have hoped during
the preseason.
Yeah. But we will see. And I think they've probably been, it's that inconsistency with the Suns. Every year they pull off a couple of amazing upsets and just they'll have 2 or 3 weeks where they look like a great side, but they just can't maintain that.
Yeah.
I wonder if Hardwick's going to be the man that can unlock that. And I tell you what, if he does, he's
coach of the year.
Well, it depends how they go and how everyone else goes. But if let's just say the Suns finish seventh, they win a final, and then they bow out and then in the second week of finals. How do you look at Damian Hardwick as a coach?
One of the greatest of all time. You'd have to.
And that's just on a season in which they don't do anything spectacular. They just take the next logical step.
Mm.
So there's a lot on the line for his legacy, I think. I know Alistair Clarkson's still coaching, but I think I would not be surprised if most people sort of start to move that goalpost towards Hardwick by the end of the year, saying, is he the best coach in footy now?
Mm, I agree with you. I don't think we're going to agree on the next topic, though. And we're staying with the Suns. Whose midfielder would you rather have in 2024? Is it Gold Coast or Fremantle?
Well, I think Gold Coast. Yeah, I think
I disagree. And we did these positional rankings. I did have the Dockers one spot above the Suns. But
yeah, so that's exactly. So it's not as if you see them totally different.
No.
I think Gold Coast. I think Gold Coast have a better midfield. I think so. We're obviously, including all of it, Jared Witts. I'm constantly told by you and Matt and everybody in the office that he's the most underrated ruck going around. So big check there.
Sure.
Then you look at their three best actual ball winning midfielders: Noah Anderson and Matt Rowell, who had breakout years last year. Matt Rowell is one of the best contested ball winners in the league. He is one of the best tacklers in the league. Anderson can do it inside and outside. Meters gain player, link man. And Miller is a year removed from nearly winning a Brownlow medal. He was injured last year and fell away a bit, but he's still in his prime, well and truly, and probably the best of the three, really, on his day. So he can do both. He can be that two-way midfielder they want. The emergence of Sam Flanders last year in the back half of the year That took everybody by surprise. I love the move to send Braden Fiorini to a wing. Mm-hmm. I think he is a really good player that was just kind of in and out in that midfield and kind of looked a bit lost. And I love the fact that Hardwick's identified that he can play that role that's been so crucial to Richmond's success, that wing roles, and he singled him out as someone who can do that. So I'm excited to see what he can do. Yeah, look, I'm not saying it's a landslide, but if you've got a gun to my head and I have to pick one, I'm going Gold Coast.
I disagree with you. You're wrong.
I'm surprised.
I'm going to preface by saying the Suns do have a good midfield, as I said. I would pick the Dockers, though. I mean, look, you spoke about Tuk Miller and nearly winning a Brownlow medal. There's actually this guy, his name's Nat Fyfe, right? And he's actually won two Brownlow
medals. Well, where's he been for the last couple of seasons?
He's been injured, but he's not injured anymore. And there's nothing better than a fully in form, fully fit Nat Fyfe.
But we've heard this story before. We've heard this story of Nat Fyfe's not injured and he's fresh and he's ready to go and this is going to be his best season since whenever. And I want it for him more than anybody.
Well done for looking into the past, but I'm going to look at the future. He is fit. He's had a good preseason. He's going to inject a lot into that Freo midfield. And now the past couple of seasons, they've had two guys who have sort of emerged as some of the best midfielders in the comp. So Andrew Brayshaw won the AFL Players Association 2022 MVP, which is a great endorsement from his fellow cohort. Caleb Sarong took his game to a new level.
Interestingly, though, Andy Brayshaw had an identical season the year before and the year after, and no one seemed to give two hoots about it.
Well, you don't care because you don't like Freo's midfield, but I care about it. Sarong, as I said, I think he can keep on getting better.
Very good.
I love the move of Hayden Young into the midfield. He's obviously developed off halfback. He's an elite ball user. You still got Jago Amiro who runs through there, and you know guys like Nathan O'Driscoll and Matthew Johnson who have loads of improvement to come and loads of potential. So they've got good young players in there as well. I think I'm taking the Freo midfield. I haven't even spoken about Luke Jackson and Sean Darcy. Darcy's injured, but I mean, by the end of this
I'll give the tick there.
They could be the best run combo in the comp by the end of this season.
Okay, interesting. Another team we haven't spoken much about, Essendon. You know, I'm not overly confident in them this year. Where do you stand on them, and do you think they can win a final?
It's interesting. They're really intriguing to watch this year. I mean, throughout the entire preseason, I've had them in my top eight and as my biggest riser. And at the moment, I've got them out of my eight. So I think they're probably the team with the biggest gap between their best and their worst. I think their floor is really low. I think their ceiling is really
high. Well, we saw that late in the year, last year.
Their finish to last season was gutless and pathetic. That was a disgrace. They were fifth after round 17, I think it was, and then got absolutely crushed by, I think it was the Dogs and the Giants.
The Giants, that game Geelong. Against the Giants was just humiliating.
Yep, and thrashed by Collingwood in the last round as well. So I'm not confident they can win a final. But what I like to do when I'm assessing teams at the start of the season is, and trying to predict how they'll go, are they addressing on-field needs? Do they have holes in their team last year that they are actually now actively addressing? And I think the Bombers, they get a tick there. And you look at the past sort of premier, I mean, Collingwood last year with Bobby Hill and Dan McStay, they're not your household names, but they plugged a hole that Collingwood needed to fill. And the Bombers have done that with a guy like Ben McKay, a big-bodied defender down there. I mean, no player in the comp took more intercept marks than him last year. I know Ball spent a lot of time in North's back line, but it's what he can do to free up guys like Jordan Ridley and Mason Redmond. So he's really important. Jade Gresham, like, don't worry about what he was at St Kilda. He's X factor in that forward line, midfield rotation as well. Like the move of Nick Martin to a back line. Can someone like Peter Wright stay fit and kick his 50-plus goals like we know he can? Partnering him with Kyle Langford, who has kicked 50 goals in a season last year.
Can he do that again?
I don't see why not.
Yeah.
There's so many pieces there with Essendon. I mean, they're led well by Zach Merritt in the midfield and Darcy Parrish as well. They're probably not a deep midfield. So I think getting games into guys like a Ben Hobbs and Elijah Shardis is probably important
It'll pay down the track. I really like that line of thinking.
The thing is, the talent is there, but it needs to click all together for them at the same time. And whether it does or not this year, I'm not sure. The reason why I don't have them in my eight, and I won't say that they'll win a final this year, as much as I think they have the right pieces, it's because I don't trust them yet. And they need to give me a reason to trust them before I actually do that.
Yeah, and as you said, the way they finished last season was just diabolical. I really like the way you look at it. You don't need to bring in a superstar everywhere. You can't. Role players, and you're plugging holes. You don't want to just get, this player's available. Let's just get him in and we'll figure it out.
Yeah.
What are your areas of that require improvement? and let's go out about fixing that and bringing in players that can plug those holes. And that is what they've done. So I'll give them the credit for that, as you said. Does it give me any confidence? No.
No.
They're still, in my mind, Essendon is still far more likely to finish bottom four than they are playing finals this year. I haven't changed on that since the end of last season. None of the players they've brought in has given enough for me to change my mind on that. And I think it goes back to the confidence levels you have in them. And do they get to the similar point where they were last year and fall flat? And it's also who they were beating. That you look at the back end of the year and it was awful, but it could have been so much worse.
They were well looked after by the fixture.
They had an easy fixture. They didn't take advantage of it in the back half. And then they got the two games they won against West Coast and North Melbourne back to back. Both of those games they should have lost.
They only beat the Eagles by 1 point.
Yeah, so the whole second half of the year, post bye, it was just horrific.
Yeah.
No, I got no confidence in Essendon being anything other than a very poor team this year.
If they finish in the bottom four, it won't shock me. If they win a final, it won't shock me. Because as I said before, there are a lot of pros, but there are a lot of cons too. Now, looking ahead to Friday night, prelim final replay between Brisbane and Carlton, your boys.
Yes.
Unfortunate result that time around, but I'm interested to know your thoughts. Who's going to win the battle between Harris Andrews and Jack Payne versus Harry Mackay and Charlie Curnow?
Yeah, heading up for this game tomorrow. Very excited. Hopefully it's a little bit better than last time I was at the Gabba. I think most people probably go with the Brisbane boys just because the way they look at the game, Brisbane is the favourite to win. And I think that probably means that they're going to contain the Carlton key forwards. I think this is a huge opportunity for both of them, but more so for Charlie Curnow.
Yeah.
He's a back-to-back.
He'll be breathing fire after what happened to him in the final series and not really performing as he could.
Ordinary in the final series, certainly by his lofty standards, but it goes beyond that. You know, we shouldn't question him because he is the back-to-back reigning Coleman medalist. So he's ticking every box and doing everything he needs to do. But the one thing that is still lacking in his game is being able to produce against the top sides. And that's where I think that improvement can come. Mm. So against the bottom side, you know, famous kick 19 goals against West Coast last year. He did beat up on the poorer sides. Now, that's no knock.
You have to be a good player to kick those goals.
You're going to have more opportunity against the poorer sides. The balls are going to be coming in there more. But against the good sides, against the top eight sides, the goals did not come as freely for Charlie Curnow. So this is a huge opportunity.
Yep.
Just as it is for Melbourne going into the opening game of the season to say, right, all this stuff that's been going on in the off-season, let's show the footy world we're still a team to be taken seriously. Same thing with Charlie Curnow. No one is questioning him as a key forward. But just put that to rest. Go and kick three or four and have those Charlie Curnow moments where you're clunking marks and wheeling around from 60. That, I think, I think Carlton has more to gain by a big performance from there too than the other way around.
100%. They'll be looking to make amends for the prelim. And, I mean, in that game, I won't put it beyond them because, as you said, they're the last three Coleman medalists, Mackay, Curnow and Curnow back-to-back. So, look, they kicked one goal and two goals respectively in that prelim, and then they played as well in round eight, and they only kicked two goals between Mackay and Curnow, and Payne played in that round eight game, not the prelim, took more intercept marks than any other player on that night. So, look, I'll stick with the home team. I think it's not necessarily the pair versus the pair. For me, I think it's going to come down to who wins that midfield battle. Mm. If Carlton do get enough supply, then Curnow and Mackay probably can get off the chain, but Brisbane won more clearances per game than any other team last year. They're playing at home and we know how formidable they are up there in Brisbane. So I think I'll be leaning towards the Brisbane boys, as much as it won't shock me if the Blues guys get off the chain a bit.
Last question of the day.
Already?
We are flying through.
You said it was a quick episode.
Good fun. It's the one game we haven't actually spoken about yet, but Collingwood and GWS on Saturday night, the other preliminary final replay. The Giants are favoured in that game with the bookmakers. They go in as not a significant favourite, but a favourite nonetheless with bookmakers, and that tells you that more fans seem to think the Giants are going to win. Do you think they deserve that favouritism?
So initially I was like, how on earth are the Pies the underdogs? They're the reigning premiers. But the more that I think about it, it makes sense as to why the Giants are the favourite. Now, I've rated them as the best list in the competition this year.
Yes.
I think the quality all over the field, highly elite in every line, but the best defence in the competition, in my opinion, as well. So, look, they're stacked everywhere you look. I think there's a lot of hype behind them this season. I think that's fair enough. They only lost to the Pies by 1 point last year. Hogan up forward. Toby Green. Their midfield is led really well by his namesake, Tom Green. And you still got Kelly and Canelio there.
Yep.
And their midfield, their defence, sorry, as I said, littered with great defensive-minded players, but offensive-minded players as well. And I think, look, no McStay for Collingwood is a big loss from that prelim side. If you can remember, he took a lot of contested marks against Sam Taylor one-on-one in that prelim. He was highly influential then. No Murphy, no Howe. So I think looking at it all, I can see why the Giants are the favourites. Interestingly, I'm actually still tipping the Pies. And until they give me a reason not to tip them, I will be tipping the reigning Premier.
Hard to go against the reigning Premier. Yeah.
There's so much hype behind the Giants, though, as I said. I think they need to walk the walk. This is actually a really big game for both clubs, obviously. But this means more for the Giants than it does for Collingwood. If they win this at home, massive. And I think they potentially will be flag favourites after this week if they can win.
Collingwood could lose by 6 goals and it's not really going to change too much, I don't think.
But if that's the other way.
Yeah. They would be concerning. I think the Giants are a touch overrated at the moment. I'm
overrated?
Yeah, just a touch.
Why?
For the fact that they are favourites in this game, for the fact that everyone seems
to explain why they're the favourites in this game.
Yes, but I'm saying they're a touch overrated in the sense that everyone that you speak to seems to say that they're going to back to the prelim finals. It's like, going into 12 months ago, we all would have sat around every person that talks about footy and said, I think the Giants could be bottom six this year, and that was not a crazy take. They had a really good year last year. The list did not change from that was their list.
Yep.
We all did the same analysis of their list. They had that year. They had a great year, particularly in the back half of it. But we also forget that halfway through the year, they were like Carlton. They were a bottom four side. Mm. So they turned it around the second half of the year. What's to say, what proof do we have that they are that is who they are now? Mm. We don't have that proof yet. And I'm not saying they won't be that and they're going to be an ordinary side. I expect them to be a top six side again. But I think everyone's gone a touch early on just how good they are going to be and putting them back into the last four or even the grand final right now. I think they've got a lot of things still to prove. But to your point, they go and beat the reigning Premier in the opening round of the season. That's you cannot ask for more confidence than that, particularly after the way their season ended last time. And to cap it, I will say I am tipping them. I'm a very big believer in the you beat me and killed us in our biggest game of the season.
The revenge thing, right?
Whether people want to call it a revenge because they say, well, you're not going on to win to lift the cup. You're not getting the cup or a chance to play in a grand final if they win this. Doesn't matter. You still want to beat the team that beat you. You still want to beat those players that beat you.
Well, that hurts.
And you carry that through your whole preseason. And you got to give credit to the AFL. The way in which they've done these...
It's brilliant. A storyline in every game.
We've criticised the opening round, the concept of it only playing 4 games and the way it's been done, and I'm not backing down from any of that. But the 4 games we've got in isolation, fantastic. Can't wait for them all.
That was fun. That's all we got time for.
That was fun.
How'd you go?
Good.
Did you win most of those debates?
Probably. You'll probably say no, but it doesn't bother me too much.
That's an absolute joke. No, that is all we have time for today, guys. As we said, it is shorter. We'll be here all season, every Thursday, so make sure you are tuning in to Red Time. Guys, the footy is back, so enjoy the footy, and we'll see you all next week.
Thanks for joining us on the ESPN Footy Pod. Make sure to subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.